This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hour number two as we roll along this morning. And a good Tuesday morning to you. Last night, again, two game fours. And now both of the teams that won last night are now up 3-1. Contrast that to tonight, where you've got two game fives, where the Boston Celtics and the Philadelphia 76ers are tied up at 2. And, of course, the Denver Nuggets and the Phoenix Suns, the nightcap tonight, where Denver will be hosting game five with that series now tied up at 2. And Denver will have Nikola Jokic for game five, the league announcing he will not be suspended for tonight's game. He was fined $25,000 for his little push of Suns owner Matt Ishbia while retrieving the basketball down in the corner, but he will not be suspended. This is the right decision. I don't think I saw one person in the media, and I've seen a lot of media on Twitter, commenting on TV, whatnot, that thought this suspension would have been justified. I think if Jokic was suspended, I think there would have been a huge uproar. Ishbia put out on Twitter, he did not think a suspension was warranted or necessary. And as we talked about this yesterday, I think the decision makes it very easy for Adam Silver is that the fact that he did push an owner of in the NBA, somebody that's within the club, someone that is within the tent. If he had pushed a fan, if he had shoved a fan to his seat, then you're dealing with another angle to this where you have to sort of show that this cannot happen and you have to sort of have to do something. If you're the commissioner, you have to do something. It could lead to legal action by that fan. It becomes a real messy situation, and you need to remind players that even on the largest stage, even in the most important series, I'm willing to alter a series by losing a two-time MVP if you make contact in a way where a fan gets pushed down to his seat. But I think because it's an NBA owner, I think it's easy for that owner to make a call on this and saying, hey, you know what? I'm putting it out on social media that I don't think he should be suspended. So, you know what? I don't know, you know, how much that weighs in on this decision, but I don't want him suspended. I'm the owner of the other team. I want him playing in game five. I want to go up against him in game five. No harm, no foul. Let's move on past this. And I think that's the right move, because if I'm Ishbia, I don't want to be the guy that's at the center of this across the NBA landscape. I know within my fan base, I would be, hey, look, he took one for the team. We didn't have to deal with Jokic in game five. But him altering a series, if he had decided that that was worthy of a suspension, if he was the owner going out and lobbying for the suspension, then it runs into more problems for the NBA, because then you have owners dictating this decision and demanding this decision. I mean, essentially, Adam Silver works for owners, but he doesn't work for a owner. He works for the owners. So collectively, he would have to have support from other owners to say, hey, tell him that this isn't worthy. But he did the right thing. I mean, he's, again, owner of the Suns. Yeah, just push me down. No big deal. And I loved his tweet because he was saying, hey, we want to go up against him. We want to play him. This series has been great. Let's keep it that way. And I think that makes it an easy decision for Adam Silver. And it's good for us as NBA fans, because now we have got a great, great series. And that's how important game four is. My God, if I'm standing on the preacher's podium, I'll do it again. That's why it's so important. Look at last night. Look how much in control the Miami Heat are in that series against New York, now up 3-1. And look at the options that the Lakers have up 3-1 rather than a series that is 2-2. Now that you're up 3-1, if LeBron and AD find themselves down by 15 points, you know, in the first quarter, there can be a lot more rest for them in that game. You have the comfortable feeling of like, all right, listen, we're going to get Golden State's best shot out of this. But tonight, Denver and Phoenix are going to go at it. And the last time they played in Denver, Phoenix had a lead late, then lost that lead when Chris Paul went out of the game in the third quarter. And the effects of that started to creep into the Suns when they couldn't hit shots and they just didn't look together offensively. But they know they can play with the Nuggets in Denver, right? That wasn't just home cooking. They've now created a system where they're getting more bench help. Booker and Durant, I don't know how long they can continue this hot shooting, to be honest with you. I don't know. I mean, normally you expect it to come down after you're so red hot that it basically comes down to the norm. But it's kind of like a roulette wheel almost, right? I mean, you go to a casino and you look up at the roulette wheel and it's like the last 10 spins are red. So you anticipate that black is due at any minute. Well, that's the gambler's fallacy. Because when you spin a roulette wheel, it has just as many opportunities, just the same percentage of landing on red that it does black. There is no, the wheel doesn't know what it had done before. But in basketball, you do know what you've done before. You know you've hit everything you've seen. And I wonder when the first real, oh, that looked good, that felt good, but it clangs off the rim. You go, oh, okay, does the next one clang off the rim? Does the next one? Does the next one? I don't know. I love watching it. I love watching. I mean, it's one thing to watch a guy score. That's always entertaining when a guy's pouring in buckets. But it's another one. It's another way to watch a guy score. Like, would you rather watch a guy score 50 points on 30 shots? Or would you rather watch a guy score 38 points, 40 points on 21 shots, 22 shots? I mean, like the efficiency is what's the impressive part about it, right? It's the nearly 78%. That Devin Booker is launching shots up, they find the bottom of the net. That's incredible, right? Now, Jokic, if he shoots 30 times a night, he's getting 50, right? Because he's not only getting buckets off the floor, he's going to the free throw line, he's getting points there. So, yeah, if the offense is rolling around Jokic, he'll get 40-plus 50 points. But for Booker to be shooting 78%, Durant's about 57%, they're pouring in all the points, but they are getting help off the bench. Now I want to know what this will do when you transfer it from Arizona to Denver, when you move it to the Mile High City, and where this series is going to go from there. What I love about this series is a feeling like whoever wins this game dictates how I feel about the series, right? If Phoenix wins this game, I think they'll win it in Phoenix. I think if Denver wins this game, I think Phoenix will win in Phoenix and we go to Denver for game 7. Like, I'm at that point where I'm thinking the home team is going to win. I'm not going to, I said this in the hour number one, I think Chris Paul's absence, it makes this team different. I don't necessarily think it makes them better. It makes them different. And right now different is working, but how much of that difference can we move to Denver for game 5 tonight? Right? Now the Boston Philadelphia series, I'd be really worried if I was Boston. I could point to my own mistakes, right? I could point to my own reasons of failure in game 4. Jaylen Brown should not have come in on the double team. He should have been guarding Harden. He should have been there. You don't leave James Harden open for a 3. But at the same time, Jason Tatum dribbling and taking too long. He got the look he wanted. He drew the attention, kicked it out to Marcus Smart. Smart knocks down the bucket, but it comes right after the buzzer. So you can point to your own mistakes, but then you have to say, how did we get there in the first place? How did we get in a tight game in the first place? I think that I'll give you an example, like Golden State last night. If you're the Warriors, how much of last night do you go, that was us making bad decisions, not knowing there was a timeout, not being able to reset? Or how much of it do you go, that was as suffocating a defense as we've seen them play against us that really took us out of our comfort zone? And now we have to figure out a way to get back into our comfort zone. How do we get Jordan Poole back in this series? How do we get him back into this since being absent from that miss in game 1? You can internalize a lot of the reasons why you find yourself down 3-1 or in a tie series when you feel like you should be up 3-1. You can self-analyze, but then there's also the idea that the other team is doing something that you better fix, right? Phoenix, I think, had this feeling coming out of Denver that the reason they lost, yeah, when Chris Paul is out and the way he leaves, and now you don't have him, so you're not planning to play without him. There's no plan offensively to do when he's out. But they felt like they just missed a lot of shots. They just, you know, they played well. They had a lead. They just started missing shots. So you know what they did in game 3? They didn't miss shots. Like Devin Booker and Kevin Durant just didn't miss shots. There's that self-analyzing aspect of this that has nothing to do with your opponent. And your opponent can do X, Y, and Z. Their 2-time MVP can get 53 points. but you control. If we do X, Y, and Z, we will win this game. How much of that will be on display tonight in Denver? How much will the Nuggets do that? Where they felt like, all right, if it's going to be the Booker and Durant show, what else can we do to counter that? Right? Can we win a series where Jokic scores 53 points? Murray gets like 23, 25, but can we win that way? Well, we almost did, but in the end we didn't. We didn't have enough towards the end. So Mike Malone is going to have his adjustments tonight, and Monty Williams is working through without having Chris Paul again as he has been ruled out for game five. So far these semifinal matchups all have been intriguing. We did talk about the fact that it feels like without, you know, outside of Jimmy Butler, there's not a lot to dissect with Miami and New York.
Isn't anything to dissect.
But I was talking to a friend of mine about this, who loves the NBA. I was talking to him over the weekend, and his daughters play, and he loves basketball. He assistant coached in high school team here in town. But I was telling him, we were just chatting about, this series, and I was telling him, I'm like, this is one of those, the NBA playoffs are so fun to watch because during the regular season, you can get so lost in so much of what is being, played out. There's all these games. There's games all the time. Some of the games don't matter. But the laser focus on the details, the laser focus on what works, what doesn't work, is absolutely fun to dissect. To watch a series play out where you're watching adjustments. But one of the other things we talked about was Eric Spoelstra. How brilliant Eric Spoelstra is. Good, the Bad, and the Dumb is coming up next on Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb here on your Tuesday. Glad you could be with us on Wake Up Call. All right, let's get the good of the day, my friend.
Oh, the good of the day. It's actually a bad for all professional team owners.
Okay.
All right. So think of all the professional team owners out there. This is bad for them. But it's good for us, and it's good for Wrexham, because Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney had an all-expenses-paid trip to Vegas for the Wrexham team.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. It was pretty awesome.
I'm ready now. I think other team owners need to step up now.
And pay for trips to Vegas?
All expenses paid.
Yeah. They gave them gambling money. Was. They told them to leave their credit cards at home.
Yes. So I'm curious. I want to know what the final tally was. I mean, I know you could do that with players. I mean, maybe there's 18, 20 kids on that team.
How many are on that team?
I'm figuring about 18 to 20.
Right.
If you just stick with the main brass, that's usually the right amount of, players for a soccer team, a soccer club. So, yeah, I mean, 18 to 20. I don't know how much money that would be times what, but I think it's just awesome that they did that for them.
So the reason teams wouldn't do it is because they're like, well, they can pay for themselves. How much is a Wrexham player
getting? Well, I mean, yeah, they're not making much at all.
So is that one of the reasons why it's like a big treat?
Yeah. I think for some of them,
Bob Myers is not paying Steph Curry to go to Vegas.
Steph Curry should be paying Bob Myers.
Exactly. I'm already giving this guy, $50 million a year. I'm not going to give him a suite at Caesar's Palace.
Yeah,
but for somebody on Wrexham, that might be like, well, I would never do this.
Their main player, Paul Mullins, I think that's their main guy, their stud forward. He might be polling six figures. If not, he's just in the high five figures.
Yeah.
But most of the guys there, I think most of the guys, didn't they show in the documentary that some of them had other jobs?
Yeah, I think so, if I'm not mistaken.
I mean, it's almost like minor league pay.
Yeah, yeah. So, good for them. That's pretty awesome. Good for
them. I just love that fact. It's like, hey, leave your credit cards at home.
And it's so easy for these guys. Like they could rob...
Rob McElhenney.
Rob McElhenney. Why was I stumbling him on his name? And Ryan Reynolds... I mean, they're like, we're bringing cameras. Like, you're going to get, he finds these casino PR people. It's like, Wrexham is going to stay here. We're in the documentary. They give them good rates, all this good stuff. Probably get some things comped, because of who they are. It's a great, it's a win-win. It's great. It's perfect. So good for them. I'm glad they did that.
Yeah.
Nice airline flight from London, Wales to Vegas.
That's the way to do it.
That's awesome. Halfway around the globe. You know, that would be like if the Houston Astros went to Monaco and they were like, let's go gamble across the globe. Let's go to a big casino location across the globe or someplace else that has massive casinos and just fun times. It's pretty awesome. All right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day does come with a tinge of good.
Okay.
All right. Then I'll leave your mind to wonder where the good comes from. But the bad of the day is that the Commanders tried to talk Andrew Luck out of retirement last season.
I saw this story, and I didn't know why Jim Irsay was upset.
Because I think it's...
I understand it's tampering.
Well, I think it's... I mean, it's tampering. I don't even know.
But he owns the rights to Andrew Luck. There's not going to be a secret Andrew Luck signing.
Yeah. And I think Jim Irsay was upset that somebody even went behind their back to do that. I don't know why Jim... I think Jim Irsay is just trying to make a big deal out of it.
Yeah, I think so, too. That's why I was bringing it up. Because he doesn't... There's nothing a team can do to get Andrew Luck to play for them.
No.
It has to come through the Colts.
Right.
So the Colts are like, go ahead, talk. If you can convince him to play football, that's actually great for us since we own his rights. And if he really wants to play football again, he's going to play for us.
Yeah, and we still need a quarterback.
Right. And, exactly. And if you want him, you got to work with us. So we might actually get something out of the deal if you want a guy that hasn't played in the league since 2020. He retired in 2019. So his last season was 2018. So you know if you want a guy that's been around,
I thought he played in 2019, but retired in 20.
I think it was 19. I think it was the summer of 2019 that he. Because I remember where I was, and we weren't in the global pandemic.
Okay,
but I could be wrong, but I'll look it up. I remember being in a crowded restaurant and seeing it on the TV, and I asked the server what that was because we were in a sportsy bar-ish type of thing. And I remember him coming back to the table and telling me Andrew Luck just retired. And that summer of 2020 didn't sound like a busy restaurant, but I could be wrong. But I remember it being really busy when I was out to dinner. So, but nevertheless, you had a guy that hasn't played in a while. I don't understand why Irsay is livid. There's nothing that can happen here.
Well, who's he going to punish?
That's right. I mean, what if the Commanders come back and go, Andrew Luck wants to play? Great. He's not playing for you.
Well, not only that.
What do you want from me?
What if it comes down like, it is tampering. I mean, the old brass said the person who did the tampering is on his way out and has, you're just getting in line with the mountain of lawsuits against them anyways.
Yeah, exactly.
Your tampering issue is like 500th on the list of stuff that Dan Snyder needs to deal with.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't make... It doesn't make, yeah, exactly. So go ahead, talk.
But like I said, that bad of the day does give us a little bit of good.
Why?
You know why?
Why?
You remember why we played
Captain
this?
Captain Andrew Luck.
Yes. He hasn't tweeted in over almost three years.
Captain Andrew Luck was so battered and so beaten, he decided to go home.
You ready?
Yeah.
Dearest mother, it warms my beard to write you. A dispatch arrived at my home far within the Appalachians, stating I'm once again the topic of conversation inside the periodicals. Fascinating. I hope you received the basket of salted raccoon toes and lemon mouse cakes. Andrew.
Oh, Andrew Luck, Captain Andrew Luck was one of those fine generals. He was one of those guys that could really make sure he threw that football pretty well. But out of nowhere, he just stopped fighting. It was just wild to have a general that was so commanding and so almost perfect in his strategical element to just stop and go home. Yeah, but you can understand why those people in Washington wanted him back. He was that important. He was that important to them. And it was kind of sad to see a guy so young and so brilliant to be out of this situation. Now, that's for sure. That's for sure.
Got a full commission, right?
That's right. That's right. Love that. I love that. Love Captain Andrew Luck, man. I want him back. I want him back in my life.
So I want Andrew Luck to be in the center of more controversy.
I do too.
Just bring him back so Captain Andrew Luck can live once again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, now what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day, I have to go with the Miami Grand Prix food prices.
Oh, they were crazy.
I don't know.
Oh, boy.
Now, I'm going to say this, all right? You know, the Hard Rock Casino Stadium?
It was a Hard Rock Stadium, yeah.
So they did have regular stadium food prices.
Right.
Okay? I have to preface that this wasn't for everyone. But if you are paying off these menus, I have no idea what you're in a different area of wealth that I don't even fathom.
Yep.
Because, and as one writer pointed out, these food prices did sell or do serve four people. Keep that in mind.
All right.
You got to keep that in mind. But yeah, you could have got, if you wanted a warmed plate of carne asada nachos, that one really killed me. Carne asada nachos, $275.
What?
How about the F1 platter? Everyone likes to share a platter.
Sure, why not? Right? Put some meat on a platter and call it a day.
Yeah, A1A sliders, secret sauce, ribeye quesadilla, chipotle sauce, crispy chicken tenders, honey mustard, for the low price of $500.
Oh. Is it made by, like, a world-renowned chef?
Sure. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, at first I was looking at this, I thought this was fake, and I'm looking around at everything, and nothing I'm seeing is, are they pointing out, like, oh, no, this was a hoax.
They're tapping into the celebrity culture that go to that, the people who don't mind spending money, and they go, let's just throw a price out there and see what these money bags will pay.
I mean,
sliders.
Maine lobster rolls, again, these serve four.
Oh, my God, it must have been $5,000.
$450 for Maine lobster rolls. I mean, at these prices, that lobster...
You get two for $10 in Portland.
Yeah, but that lobster needs to have been crawling in my sandwich.
Uh-huh. No question about it.
And then somebody showed a picture of their Wagyu steak sandwich.
That's not bad. That's Wagyu beef. That's not bad.
Yeah, no, but have you seen the steak sandwich?
No.
It was $42 for the steak sandwich.
Oh, wonderful.
And the guy, the only thing he could tweet was fire festival vibes.
Very much so. Yeah, it was a lot of. The Miami Grand Prix is in some trouble. It tickets did not sell. I it's only its second year
food.
Of existence. It needs a rehaul. It needs somebody to go in there and go, look, if we're going to do this every year, we got to come up with a different strategy because this we're getting kind of barbecued here. We're only 2 years in.
Close down
already,
the streets. Come on.
We're just
stop having it a stadium.
We made a mess. We made a mess of everything. Only 2 years in. And look at Vegas. Vegas, a bottle of water might be $4,000.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. By the way, I know Chicago Blackhawks won the NHL draft lottery last night.
Yep.
I did not know that there was the draft lottery last night.
Nope.
But I knew that there was a kid, I couldn't name him off the top of my head, but
Bedard.
It's Connor Bedard, who is 17-year-old kid.
I'm not sure.
Is it Bedard?
I have no idea.
I don't know. I'll say Bedard, but maybe it's wrong. You know, we'll find out. But
the
Blackhawks get to pick him.
I thought about bringing this up in the good, the bad, the dumb, and putting it either towards the bad or the dumb, because apparently there's a lot of controversy and conspiracy theory behind it now.
Oh, much like the frozen envelope for the New York Knicks in 85?
Yes.
Which
the reason why is because if you were watching it live, which none of you were.
Right. I didn't even know it was on.
Apparently, the guy announcing all the picks. Now, I mean, this just could be a glitch in the Matrix type of thing. You know, the TV, he got the memo before the video could show it. But he announced Columbus was the third pick, received the third pick. Before the card was even drawn or shown or flipped over or whatever, how they did it.
Oh, okay.
So, like, he knew ahead of time that Columbus was it, but I think it's just, the delay factor.
Oh, that's probably true.
But, it's not stopping, the frozen envelope conspiracy theory.
So how did they do it? Did they flip the cards over or did they pull them out of a bucket?
It almost looked like it was like a Family Feud type of thing.
Okay.
Where they flip over, their survey says, and they show
the thing. Is it possible he knew the outcome because they were like, it's already set. You're just flipping the cards over, but it's already set. It's not pulling out of envelopes out of a bin and you opening the envelope and as surprised as everybody else. You know what the order is.
Yeah.
Don't tell anybody, but this is the way it's lined up.
And I totally think it's that. Where I think the controversy comes in is because, you know, the Blackhawks ended up with the number one overall pick, the same season that they're losing their franchise Hall of Fame player.
Yeah, they lost two guys. They traded Patrick Kane to the Rangers, and then Jonathan Toews, they just went, we're not bringing you back, so whatever. And now they get this kid, this 17-year-old kid from Vancouver, Connor Bedard. And he's going to be the new NHL superstar.
Right.
He's the next Connor McDavid.
And he'll be in Chicago for his career, presumably, and lead them to Stanley Cup playoff victory, Stanley Cup wins after another.
Yeah, exactly.
And so the way I was gathering it, you know, reading into the conspiracy theory very much is like the frozen envelope in the Knicks game, Patrick Ewing.
It was it was
or you know the
what was the other one
Dan Gilbert
his son just passed away
but his son who was there representing the Cavaliers and they lose LeBron James but they get the number one overall pick.
The next year very next year they get the number one pick they lose LeBron James they get the number one pick like here you go ahead you can make up for it. Was that the year they drafted Kyrie Irving?
I think so.
Yeah, I think that was the year. They had the number one pick again, and they drafted Anthony Bennett.
Yeah.
Which didn't make sense. But neither here nor there. But anyway, this Bedard kid, if I'm pronouncing his name right, is I saw a little read a little article about him. He plays for the Regina Pats in Canada, and he's a megastar. He is, he's like a guy that can't go anywhere. Everyone knows who he is.
And I guess he doesn't mind playing for Chicago because, he could have dictated anywhere he goes, right?
I guess
maybe
so,
he didn't want to go to
maybe
Columbus.
Because
I think Columbus was the favorite to get the number one overall pick.
Might have been. So, yeah, too bad. He's got to go to Chicago now, and he's got to be the new Blackhawks superstar.
Yep.
So there you go. Like him and Victor Wembanyama, they'll be the draft. Bryce Young, Victor Wembanyama, and Connor Bedard are going to be the number one 2023 picks that we're going to watch to see if they develop.
We haven't had the NBA draft lottery yet, right?
No, that's actually coming up. That is coming up
right?
Soon. It's going to be. It used to be at halftime, like on a Saturday, but I think now they do it on a weeknight. I think it's a weeknight game, but they'll do it like at halftime of a game or in between games. I can't remember what they do now.
And they haven't found a way to. It's a week from today.
So it's a week from today.
Wow!
So
look at
draft lottery.
They haven't found a way to make this an hour long program yet, or two hours long.
They could. Remember, they would have the owners sitting there, and they had the representatives of every team. It was always the most uncomfortable thing. Yeah, they had the guys would sit there. And it was always like this uncomfortableness of like, hi, yeah, we stink. Sorry. Yeah. But then there would be the owner that was like, no, we don't stink, but we played our cards right and we ended up here. We're still in the playoffs. So there was always this, we're desperate. We better land the top two pick. Or, you know, and there was others that were like, I'm just here to get richer. But yeah, then they do it the same way. They do the ping pong balls and all the combinations, and then it's always done in the back room, and they bring the envelopes out. Adam Silver's like, with the 7th pick, the Charlotte Hornets. Yeah, I'm like, oh boy. And then you could almost see like the distraught on the faces of everybody. Oh, I'm not going to get Victor Wembanyama this year. Oh. All right. And these other athletes, you know, these players at the draft will be like, yeah, I know. I know you wanted him, but you got me. You picked third.
I still don't get how this thing works.
The ping pong balls?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I got it like this. It took me a while to get it.
Because I'm reading it, and I'm like, okay.
This is the way I might be wrong on this, but I think this is how I understand the way it works. So what they did was they said, okay, we're going to have a number of ping pong balls in
14
of them in the bin. And that's going to create like a lottery combination. And then we're going to take all the teams and based on the percentage of get the number one pick, they're going to get a certain number of allotments. So if you're Houston, for example, you get a lot of chances. It's almost like lottery tickets. You get a lot of lottery tickets. And then whatever combination comes out, if you have that combination, you get the pick, and it goes from there. But I didn't mind. I understand why they were doing it. They did it because I think Orlando got back-to-back picks in the 90s because they got Hardaway and then they got Shaq, or they ended up with number one picks in the draft. And they went, okay, this is not fair because we're telling teams that are bad that if you're not so bad, you have the same chance of getting the number one pick as a team that's terrible. We want to weigh it in such a way that we don't want to promote tanking, but we also do want the bottom teams to get better. So we're going to weigh it in the lottery so that those bottom teams, they're not guaranteed a number one pick because they have the worst record, but they are guaranteed at least a better chance in the lottery of getting the number one pick rather than a bunch of envelopes or ping pong balls that are like, you have a 1 in 9 chance of the teams that are in it, whatever it is. You have the same odds as somebody else.
All right, but they only do it for the first 4 picks.
And then how do they do the other picks?
It just says the 10 remaining teams are slotted numbers 5 through 14. It's probably based off a record. The team remaining with the worst record gets the 5th pick and so on. So they do it for the first 4 picks.
Oh, so you know... So when they have all those owners up there, they don't...
No.
They could still be the number one pick.
You have, what, 14 teams in the lottery, right?
Oh, I get it. So what you're saying is that when... I'm so confused. Why don't you just put the stupid things put them in an envelope and put them in a drawer again?
You know, when FIFA does the World Cup draw, it makes so much sense. It's so much easier. I guess this is the way it's done. Like you said, they have 14 ping pong balls, all each with a different number on it. And they throw them all in a big old bin, stir it up for like 20 seconds, and then select 4 balls. And that creates a number combination.
Right.
They do that for the first 4 picks.
So
like Houston, and like you said, Houston will have, there's 1,000, I guess there's 1,000 numbers to be divided up.
A whole bunch of combinations, and they get a certain percentage of those combinations. Yeah.
And so they have... numbers 1,000 through what, I don't know, whatever 4-digit number that comes up. And so that's what they get.
Nice. Nice. I didn't mind it was always fascinating with the envelopes back in the day. Cause again, everybody had the same chance. And so you didn't go into the draft going like, well, my team has a 1.3% chance of getting the number one pick. I was like, no, you had like a 1 in 8 chance or 1 in whatever chance, 10 chance of getting the number one pick. I remember one year, the Celtics, it was the year, unfortunately, Lynn Bias passed away, but the Celtics and the Sixers had the first 2 picks in the draft. Philadelphia got the number one pick and Boston had the 2 pick, and they picked Lynn Bias and he unfortunately passed away.
I guess something to think about, because I never really thought about this, because I'm getting this from the Detroit Free Press, who are talking about the Pistons, because the Pistons have a 14% chance to win the top pick. Houston and San Antonio also have a 14% chance to get the top pick.
Oh, okay. Okay. Right? So it's not slightly weighted towards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it says, but no matter what, the Pistons can fall no farther than 5th.
Yeah, they've done that too. They've done that too, where they've said, okay, you're not going to go below this because of what you said. They rank. So if you're not in the top 4,
yeah,
right? What they're saying is, if you're not in the top 4, you get at least this position. You're not going to pick 14th when you had a 12-70 record, something awful like that. They are trying to make the bottom teams a little bit better. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
And Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, again, the NBA playoffs continuing tonight as we roll along here on Sports Map Radio. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with 2 N's. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. They hear that a lot at chickendinnercasino.com because they have so many winners, and that's because they have so many ways to win, including slots and blackjack, poker, more. Of course, you can step into the sports book. You can bet on any sport, and now it's the perfect time in May because you've got the NBA playoffs going on. Major League Baseball is in full force. You got the PGA Championship coming up later this month. And right now, listeners of Sports Map Radio and Wake Up Call, get a special welcome offer. Go to chickendinnercasino.com/sports and get a 50% welcome bonus, first-time welcome bonus, up to $1,000. That's right. Get a 50% welcome bonus up to $1,000 when you go to chickendinnercasino.com/sports. So what are you waiting for? Become a winner winner today at chickendinnercasino.com. And remember to add the /sports to your special welcome offer. Again, that's chickendinnercasino.com. All right. So as we talked about the NBA playoffs last night, fascinating results. Jimmy Butler and the Heat continuing to that ankle injury from game one has it caused him to miss game two, but it did not cause him to miss games three or four. He's been the leading scorer for Miami. Eric Spoelstra, I want to get back to him for a second because we talked a little bit about him yesterday, the longest tenured coach in the NBA, a guy that Pat Riley entrusted back in 2008 with the team. He went from basically a videotape guy, worked his way up, learned from the best, became coach. But he was also the guy that was given the task of taking over not taking over because he was already the head coach. But many thought like Riley would come out of the office to coach when they got LeBron James and Chris Bosh. Right? Remember that feeling of, gee, I don't know, can this kid, yeah, is he the guy that's going to do this?
Well, it wasn't only that, but it was also, why wouldn't Riley want, the ego, right, of Riley?
Riley had won the title with them in 06. With the Dwayne Wade, Shaquille O'Neal championship. Yep. And then he went in the front office. Eric Spoelstra took over the team a couple years later. It's a grind, I get it. But when you have LeBron and Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade and everybody's thinking you're going to win six championships in a row.
Yeah, it makes life a little bit easier. I mean, you're not really coaching.
Right. You tell Spoelstra, sit down, kid. I've got this, right? I'm running this. But he let Spoelstra run it. And, he was in his 30s. At the time, he was a kid, basically, in terms of average age of NBA coaches. And he has the responsibility of running that. They lose the finals to Dallas. Now, if that doesn't get you thrown out of Miami, nothing will, right? But he doesn't. He doesn't. He stays. And they win two championships. They lose another championship. He goes 2-2 in four titles with the Heat. But he's still the head coach there, and he's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant. And he took a Miami Heat team to the finals in the bubble, and now he's got this team one win away from the Eastern Conference Championship after going playing around in the play-in tournament before upsetting Milwaukee in five games, where he outcoached Mike Budenholzer, and he's outcoaching Tom Thibodeau, who he always does anyway. But this is a guy, this is the success story of him. His story is pretty remarkable. Because you'd think if you have LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh, and the country is rooting against you, because LeBron really angered a lot of people around the NBA world. People I knew at the time that did not follow the NBA, couldn't have cared less about the NBA, actually would point out how much they hated the NBA, were ecstatic that Miami lost that first championship with those three. And I remember asking them, You, why do you even care? And they all said the same thing. I just don't like LeBron. I don't like LeBron. And it was because of the decision. And it was the arrogance of all the championships they were going to win. And also, it had struck a nerve with a lot of people, like a lot of old timers who did not believe that you created a team through some sort of backroom negotiation among players. If you created a team by having a superstar and then getting pieces of that superstar for that player, nobody had a problem with that. That's sports. That's what happens in sports. If I've got a talented guy and I could use a staunch big man or a defender, a better defender or whatever, add those pieces to the superstar. What people didn't like was this was kind of the first time stars colluded on their own and then created an atmosphere of this is what we want. Now everybody make this happen. And they did make this happen because I'd said many times, if you go back to the story of the decision and LeBron wanting to go to Miami, he was a free agent and could take his talents to Miami, but it was easier for Miami to actually have him sign with Cleveland and trade for him. Cleveland ended up getting something out of it, but it worked out better in that way for everybody. it worked out for Cleveland because they didn't just lose a superstar. They got some assets from in the trade. Miami got a better financial deal situation by having him sign with Cleveland and trading for him. It's all the business of sports, but it wasn't a straight up go to Miami and sign. But they had to have, but they at least had to have the working partnerships of everybody involved, and they did, because again, there was something in it for everybody, and there's certainly something in it for LeBron. And I remember thinking at the time, it was such a stupid decision. He was young and he got really bad advice. And this is why I've said, when you are young, find somebody in your inner circle that can say no to you. Find someone you trust that you trust them when they say, this is a terrible idea. I know you don't want to hear it, but you love me and trust me. This is a terrible idea. When you surround yourself with people who are in it for themselves, meaning they're now clinging on to you because you're their meal ticket, because you are their means of living a lifestyle they could not achieve on their own. And it's like I said, you see these athletes bring their friends with them, but their friends don't become friends. Their friends become yes men. Oh, there may be some ribbon, maybe some good nights in Vegas where we have a good time with each other and tease each other. It's like old times when we were all broke and going around to the local store and trying to figure out if we could afford a soda and candy. But there is a change in your friends where they do that, but they're always wary of losing their place within the inner circle. So they say yes to you all the time. They say yes to all your purchases. They say yes to all your decisions, business-wise. You get in bed with this company that's, that's not a good company for you. You don't have that somebody in your life. Nobody had LeBron's back. Nobody could tell LeBron, this is going to be terrible for you. This is not good. You don't do it this way. You're getting pressure from these media outlets, sponsor. Look, I have zero idea how much money he raised for the YMCA in Greenwich, Connecticut. I don't know. He raised money for them. That was not part of the number one reason LeBron James was at the YMCA that many years ago doing that. He used it as like a shield to cover this terrible decision. Like, we'll do it at a YMCA to raise money for these kids. And who could have a problem with that? But it's like when a struggling actor who finds himself in trouble, they're like, find a charity support quick. Just get me one. Anyone. Sick dogs, lost children. Find me something. I don't care. Whatever it is. I need to be in front of a charity. LeBron found a charity. And yeah, he raised money for them. But it was a cover for, this is not going to go well. And it didn't go well. Spoelstra had to deal with that. The guy who was part of the ramification of that, the guy who felt that, as well as those players, was Spoelstra. Because Spoelstra is now, he's just a guy, he's taken over this championship team from 2006, a couple years later, takes over the team in 08, and now he's at the center of being a young coach with a very powerful LeBron James coming. Right? And not only powerful LeBron James, it's like if LeBron James walked in and I went, oh yeah, now everybody hates us. So we got that going for us. So can you imagine everywhere you go, every road game, there's animosity. And it's sort of fake animosity too, because people in Dallas, Dallas, bad example because they played them in the playoffs, but going to Phoenix or LA or wherever they were going, Boston, Philadelphia, people were booing them, screaming at them. Why? Because a guy on TV kicked Cleveland in the face, a city they couldn't have cared less about, made fun of them for years for losing to John Elway twice, and the Indians weren't very good, and Jordan was beating the Cavaliers, just kicking that city constantly. But the moment LeBron said something about him, the moment LeBron disrespected the city by going on TV, now everybody felt like they needed to support Cleveland. Everybody needed to support that city. So they're getting booed everywhere they go. The animosity was so thick you could pour it on pancakes. And who was at the brunt of it? Just a young guy just trying to be an NBA head coach with superstars. Well, they did win championships. They didn't win seven. They won two. And Spoelstra's still standing. And LeBron is too. That's the amazing part of it. LeBron is too. But Eric Spoelstra survived that, won his titles, stayed. And now he's got this team, an 8 seed. A win away from the Eastern Conference Finals. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.